Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
A new poll on the PRO Act. Yes, more Americans in favor. Labor and the vaccine, what we'll probably see at the bargaining table. And today on the show, the latest from the Ohio AFL-CIO, and we'll talk about the unvaccinated working in healthcare. Welcome to the Tuesday, August 3rd edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. We have two guests on the show today. One of our regulars, Mr. Timothy Berga, will be our first guest. Tim is president of the Ohio AFL-CIO, and he recently recorded a video about why we need to protect the right to organize, better known as the PRO Act. And if you've been listening to this show, you know all about the PRO Act. And the video is worth watching. We're going to play a snippet of it here on America's Workforce. Let's listen.
Right now, there is something fundamentally wrong with our economy. It serves and protects only the top tier of wage earners, while working people right here in Ohio and around the country work multiple jobs and longer hours just to get by.
One of the earlier speakers said, "This is the most dramatic change in labor law in 80 years. And I say, thank God.
The PRO Act is the most important worker empowerment legislation since the Great Depression. It levels the playing field between employers and working people and establishes a fair process for forming unions so we can all have a say in improving our wages, working conditions, and quality of life. More than 60 million people in the United States say they would join a union today if given the opportunity. The PRO Act would give them that opportunity. It would ensure workers can quickly secure a first contract and require that companies respect the results of union elections. The PRO Act would repeal archaic Jim Crow right-to-work laws designed to pit workers against each other, which leads to lower wages and dangerous working conditions. It would protect collective action, prevent companies from permanently replacing workers on strike, and put an end to employers misclassifying employees as independent contractors. It would strengthen the National Labor Relations Board to enforce meaningful penalties for companies that violate the law. Critically, the PRO Act would address the systemic wage inequality based on race and gender that has plagued our economy and society for generations. The PRO Act is landmark civil rights and economic stimulus legislation, not just labor law reform. Working people are diverse. We represent different ethnicities, gender identities, religions, sexual orientations, and ages. A union contract is the best tool we have to close the racial and gender wage gap and to ensure dignity, respect, and representation for all workers, regardless of where we're from or how we identify.
In the late 70s, a CEO made 35 times the worker. Today, it's 300 to 400 times the worker.
Facts are facts. As union membership declines, inequality skyrockets. From 1945 to 1973, as union membership rose, productivity and pay doubled. Wages for workers were rising faster than those at the top, inequality was shrinking, and the strongest middle class in history was born. But for the following 40 years, there was only a 9% increase in wages for workers. Even as productivity increased, the inequality of wealth, wages, and power continued to grow. This didn't happen by accident. Companies will not voluntarily take less. That's not how it works. Stronger unions equal higher wages, safer working conditions, and dignity for all working people. Passing the PRO Act is our first step to rebalance the playing field.
Wall Street didn't build this country. The middle class built the country. And unions built the middle class. So that's why I'm calling on Congress to pass Protect the Right to Organize Act, the PRO Act, and send it to my desk so we can support the right to unionize.
We can't address the inequality of income and opportunity without first addressing the systemic inequality of power that strips working people of our voice, dignity, and rights on the job. It's time to reclaim our power and create a brighter future for all working people. Call your senator today and tell them to support the PRO Act now.
Once again, that's Tim Berge, president of the Ohio AFL-CIO, talking about the importance of the PRO Act. And I'll share with you some new data on how Americans feel about organizing and protecting the right to organize in the United States. So Tim will talk about that. We'll also get into redistricting, and we'll see if there's anything on tap in the fall legislative session. So Tim Berge will be our first guest. Jenny Deem will be joining us later in the show. She's been on before. She's a reporter with ProPublica, and she recently came out with a story about the surprisingly low rates of vaccination among nursing home workers. Yeah, that's right. The story is about two sisters. They live in two different states. One's in Missouri, the other in Pennsylvania. They both work in healthcare. One's vaccinated, the other is not. And the sad part about it, they did some checking. And you'll be surprised to learn that more than 40% of the nation's nursing home and long-term healthcare workers have yet to receive vaccinations. Now, consider these statistics. Nursing homes faced a shocking mortality rate during the pandemic. In the United States, COVID-19 killed more than 133 residents and nearly 2,000 staff members. That was between May 31st of 2020 and this July 4th. Now, that's according to the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. The true toll is thought to be even higher because they were not collecting the data right away. As I indicated, that was the end of May. The pandemic hit the United States, what was it, January of 2020. So there's like a five-month period that no data was being collected. In the meantime, a lot of the staff are saying, you know what, I don't know, we don't know if it's safe, but they're still working in an environment that could transmit a deadly virus to the people who reside there. So Jenny Deem is going to cover that and more as our second guest right here on the show. All right, about the Poll Act, a new poll just released found that a whopping 69% of voters in nine battleground states support legislation that would strengthen workers' right to form a union. The poll conducted by Hart Research Associates found that only 20% opposed to the bill after receiving an explanation of what the Protect the Right to Organize Act does. That's it, just 20%. The poll shows that 87% of Democrats, 60% of independents favor the legislation. Among Republicans, 45% support it. Only 40% oppose it. Pretty darn significant. Meanwhile, 400 religious leaders from many different faiths and denominations came together over the last weekend to write a letter to the U.S. Senate urging passage of the PRO Act. And they wrote, "Drawing on our sacred scriptures and religious traditions, we believe workers should be free to join together in solidarity to make their voices heard. We, the undersigned faith leaders, share a commitment to human dignity and worker justice, and that is why we support the PRO Act." The Catholic Labor Network said that about 240 Catholic priests and religious and lay social ministry leaders signed the letter circulated by the Interreligious Network for Worker Solidarity. Last week, both private and public employers began to institute vaccine mandates. California was the first, announcing that all state employees must provide proof of vaccination or wear masks and submit to coronavirus testing. Well, last week, Google, Facebook, and Netflix issued vaccine mandates for certain employees. And then Governor Andrew Cuomo announced that New York's 130,000 government workers must be vaccinated or face weekly testing. On Thursday, President Biden announced a vaccine mandate for federal workers, encouraging employers across the private sector to follow this strong model. Also, North Carolina and San Diego County announced a vaccine requirement for its public workforce. Then Walt Disney and Walmart followed suit. All salaried and non-union hourly Disney employees must be vaccinated within 60 days. All employees at Walmart headquarters and managers who travel within the United States must be vaccinated by early October. Walmart also doubled its vaccination cash incentive for store and warehouse workers to $150. Now, SEIU Local 1000, they're in California, has objected to Governor Gavin Newsom's mandate that all state employees provide proof of vaccination, demanding bargaining on the question of vaccine mandates before the mandate is implemented. His order also applies to private sector healthcare workers. And in New Jersey, healthcare unions are also demanding bargaining over vaccine mandates issued by private hospitals. Mandates are opposed by several unions. One of them is 1199 SEIU, which represents approximately 8,000 nursing home workers in New Jersey, and JNESO. I don't know what that stands for, but it's a professional health workers union of 5,000. So we're seeing some pushback on that around the country. The Senate confirmed Gwen Wilcox and David Prouty as the two newest members of the National Labor Relations Board last week, setting up a Democratic majority at the agency that is likely to result in a series of pro-labor actions and possible reversals of many decisions that happened when Trump was in office. Wilcox, a senior partner at union side labor and employment firm Levy Ratner and a former attorney at the New York City region of the NLRB earlier in her career, will make history as the first black woman to serve as a board member since the agency's founding, going back to 1935. Can you believe that? Prouty, likewise, has a steadfast union side background, having served as the lead attorney for the Major League Baseball Players Union and most recently as the general counsel for SEIU Local 32BJ. And last week, this was on Wednesday, many unions lauded the Senate's confirmation of both Prouty and Wilcox, with AFSCME President Lee Saunders issuing a statement emphasizing that Wilcox will be instrumental in guiding the development of federal labor law and upholding workers' freedom to form unions. And one more here. Workers at the Guggenheim Museum have moved to form what could be the second union at the museum, established in the last 2 years. Last Friday, the Technical Office and Professional Union Local 2110, they're part of the UAW, filed a petition with the Labor Board to represent about 160 museum curators, conservators, editors, and certain other employees. And if successful, they would join workers in similar job classifications at institutions like the Museum of Modern Art and the New Museum of Contemporary Art, who are already unionized, as well as join alongside the Guggenheim art handlers and maintenance mechanics, who unionized with Local 30 of the International Union of Operating Engineers. That happened 2 years ago in 2019. All right, we have to take a quick break. When we come back, Mr. Timothy Berger, president of the Ohio Labor Federation.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with prostate, breast, or any other cancer after taking Zantac? You may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Chris LaGrange here, host of UCOM Live with Chris LaGrange. News, talk, sports, and workforce politics. The fastest growing podcast on, in, and around the internet. Join us live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter with archives on UCOMLive.com. Our loud and colorful panelists bring you current events like no other. So follow and subscribe today wherever great podcasts are found.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And of course, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast, at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation, all connected to the AFL-CIO. Speaking of which, let's go to line number one right now. Welcome one of our regulars, Mr. Timothy Berger, who is president of the Ohio AFL-CIO. Hey, Tim, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today, buddy?
Hey, we're doing great. Good to be with you.
And we just played your video and all about the PRO Act and had some good numbers here to report on. They did a poll in nine battleground states and found that almost 70% of voters support the PRO Act. So your timing is really good. So let's talk about this video and let's talk about what, well, not just the Ohio AFL-CIO, but all the labor federations in America seem to be really joined in solidarity on this effort to make sure we pass the PRO Act, which would be the most significant change to labor law since the New Deal. We're going back to 1935. But Tim, let's talk about the video. How did this unfold for you?
Well, we wanted to make sure that we're continuing a layered approach to inform not only union members, but all Ohioans about the need to level the playing fields for workers. For too long now, workers who want to join a union feel like they just have little opportunity to do so because there's so many things that get in the way of allowing for those fair elections, such as employer interference. And so many times when we do get a new union voted in, they have very difficult time getting the first contract because the employer continues to stall the operation and then try to run the clock out. So those are two of the things that would change under the Protecting the Right to Organize Act. Again, to try to level the playing field, what we've seen over the last 40 years is corporate executive pay has gone up from 30-1 executive to worker pay ratio to, 300-1. And as a result of losing union density, share of wages has gone down and production continues to go up. So we're simply trying to level the playing field. And this would be the most significant labor law reform since the Great Depression. And it's most urgently needed. And as you'd indicated, the polling is showing Americans overwhelmingly approve Congress moving forward to getting this done.
I like what you said in the video that more than 60 million people in the country, 60 million, say they would join a union if given the opportunity. Now think about this, Tim. What do we have in the Labor Federation in the country? Is like 12.5 million? Can you imagine the ranks going up to what would it be, over 70 million if given the opportunity to organize? Wouldn't that change the workforce in America dramatically?
Oh, for the better. I mean, what we saw in the 50s when unions were at their height, that's when the middle class was at its strongest. That's when wages were rising proportionate to the work that was getting done. And it wasn't all landing in the lap of the super wealthy. The super wealthy did just fine. We don't have to worry about that. But workers, made sure that they got a piece of the action or shared in the wealth that they were creating. And as a result, it's a win-win situation because when workers thrive and a middle class expands, small businesses do well. It's common sense economics. So we're optimistic that we can urge Congress to get this done and get it to President Biden's desk.
And Tim, don't you feel like the stars have aligned right now? You got a pro-union guy in the White House. You got a pro-union guy as labor secretary. The National Labor Relations Board is now got a Democratic majority. You're going to see more pro-union rulings coming out of there. I mean, this is the time. We just got to get a couple of senators on board. How do you feel about that moving? Because with the polling, with all these things happening, do you feel eventually we're going to get to where we need to be?
I think you're right. I think all of that makes sense. And the most important thing is workers are taking stock, right? They've reassessed all this downtime with the pandemic and what's happened in the country. They're looking at their situation saying, I don't want to go back to normal. Mm-hmm. I don't want to continue to work for poverty wages, 2-3 jobs, no health care benefits, no retirement opportunity, no pension opportunity. And they're saying, we're not doing that anymore.
Right.
I think that's the most significant thing. And then you've got, like you had indicated, you've got President Biden, who's been the most pro-union president since FDR. And you've got a Congress now that is really looking at transformative actions like the American Rescue Plan and now the American Jobs Plan. So it feels like there's a renaissance and hopefully ushering in a new era, one that puts workers first.
And the other thing that's going on right now is infrastructure, and it appears to be very, very close on the $1.2 trillion. That's certainly good news, and I know there's labor protections in that legislation as well. And they want a bigger one as well. I think they're pushing for like a $3 billion plan. You know, step by step, we'll eventually get where we need to be. Tim, let's talk. There's a couple other things, too, I want to get into. Redistricting. I know you wanted to get into that because, as you know, gerrymandering has, and it's not just in the state of Ohio, it's all around the country. The voters went to the polls a couple of years ago to change all that. Where are we with all of that right now?
Well, you're right. The voters in 2015 and 2018 went to the polls and voted on a more transparent, more fair way of drawing our state legislative and our congressional district lines. So we've got 99 state house seats, 33 state senate seats, and we go from 16 congressional districts in Ohio to 15 because the census was taken. We did not gain population relative to the rest of the country, so we did lose one congressional seat. So the way this works now, and the challenge has been with COVID, the Census Bureau had a difficult time getting the counts across the country, so the data was late coming in. And we're now scheduled to receive Ohio's census data on August the 16th. So Governor DeWine has called for a redistricting commission meeting this Friday. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So the 7-member commission will start to meet to lay out the process. The Republicans have the majority on the 7-member. The whole idea here is to have maps, you know, sometime in September, state legislative maps, congressional maps. And the criteria that the voters voted on are that, you know, this has to be a transparent process. No more of these backroom situations where at least 10 years ago, the Republicans drew the maps, which were ultimately ruled the congressional maps unconstitutional, but it was too late in the process to really do anything about it. So now they're going to sit down in an open process, hopefully, and then there'll be hearings, field hearings across the state. Then there'll be hearings at the state house with hopes of having maps, you know, before October gets here. So the criteria spells out that you cannot continue to this process of slicing and dicing communities and subdivisions just for political gain. So the idea here is to keep communities and subdivisions whole. And the whole what we've said all along, Flash, is that working issues of unions and working people, if we just have fair districts, our issues, we have no problem arguing our issues and winning the day on our issues because they're main mainstream sort of working class job issues. So we're just looking for fair districts and hope that these maps over the next 10 years will serve Ohioans well. And the general consensus right now, unfortunately, is that we may be at impasse because, we can't get bipartisan maps, and maybe the courts will have to intervene. So we'll see. We'll let it play out. We're going to be a part of the process, the field hearings, the map drawing contests, all that.
It's hard to believe, but you have to fight to be fair. That's essentially what we're talking about right now, because it has not been fair for so long. You know, while we're talking about the political process, anything new on voter suppression laws in the state of Ohio that might be coming to fruition? We're seeing it happen, as you well know, in Florida, Georgia, and Texas. They're still holed up with the Democrats that have left there. What's the status in the state of Ohio, Tim?
Well, there's a new voter suppression bill that's being written up, and I'm not sure it's been introduced yet by one of the Republicans. I can't recall who the sponsor of that is, which we thought might be coming. The bill that's out there now, there's some good stuff in it and some unnecessary and bad stuff in it. And on the whole, we would suggest against it. But we're now keeping our eye on something that would be more aligned with what we're seeing in states like Texas. So, the General Assembly is on recess until, the fall. Early fall. So, but when they get back in, I suspect that's going to start moving. Redistricting will kind of overshadow everything.
Mm-hmm.
There's a sports gaming measure that needs to be taken up as it relates to this sports betting. Okay. And sports betting's coming to Ohio, and we just want to make sure that it's done the right way and housed in the casinos that are regulated. And, the casinos were passed by the voters. They were union built, they're union run. And we need to make sure that if there's sports betting, that the casinos seem to be a logical place where that would take where that would happen. So that's kind of what's on the agenda as they get back in the fall.
Tim, there's always those surprises. You got those lawmakers downstate that like to talk about, we need right to work, or we got to attack prevailing wage. But so far in previous years, those have stalled in committee. So hopefully that'll be the case this time around if they come up again. Tim, you take care, my friend. Great job as usual. Keep up the fight, and let's keep talking about that PRO Act. How's that sound?
That sounds great. Thanks so much for having me.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Jenny Deem will be joining us to talk about the pandemic of the unvaccinated. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Iron Workers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 iron workers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union iron workers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our iron workers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And you can check us out on five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. Let's go to line number two. Welcome to the show. Jenny Deem had her on a couple of weeks ago. Today, she has a great story from a wonderful publication called ProPublica, which is a nonprofit newsroom that investigates abuses of power. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of abuses of power. And today she's going to talk about the unvaccinated, especially in nursing homes. Hey, Jenny, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me.
And you actually did this story with a couple of other reporters. And
correct.
For the life of me, I see, what is it, Ryan Gabrielson and Bianca Fortis. Did I get those names correct?
Gabrielson, yes.
Gabrielson, okay. For the life of me. All right. I just can't understand. I mean, we're hearing so much about the pandemic of the unvaccinated, and a lot of people that were anti-vaxxers are now coming around. I saw the story on ABC News 2 weeks ago about a guy on his deathbed saying, give me the vaccine, give me the vaccine. And this is a person that did not want it all his life until the last couple of minutes. And the nurse said, sorry, it's too late. You can't. And then he died. Healthcare, nursing homes. A lot of people died in nursing homes. You would assume that the people working there would be vaccinated. I guess that's not the case. Talk to me about the two sisters that you talk about in your story.
You're right. What you said is exactly the premise that we undertook when we were reporting. My colleague Ryan he pulled the numbers from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which now require nursing homes and long-term care facilities to report the number of both residents and employees that have been vaccinated either fully or have had partial vaccinations. And the numbers were actually quite surprising considering what, you know, nursing homes were the epicenter of, especially in the early days of the pandemic. You know, they were just devastated. There were, the numbers are just horrible. It was 133,000 deaths of residents, 2,000 deaths of employees. And those are low numbers because there was a lag in the in some of the case reporting. So they were higher than that. So you're absolutely right. The assumption would be that when the vaccines rolled out, those and healthcare workers were given priority, those people who were on the front lines would be, first in line to get the vaccine, but it just didn't turn out that way. And in our story, we start out by telling sort of the tale of two sisters. One is in Missouri, which is very hard hit right now. Uh-huh. She is the head of the Missouri Nurses Association. She is pro-vaccine, fully vaccinated, has encouraged her membership to be vaccinated. And her sister, who is a traveling certified nurses assistant in rural Pennsylvania, is not. And the woman who was pro-vaccine, when I was speaking to her, she said, I asked her about, I said, it must be frustrating to see this divide within your membership. And she said, it's more than just the membership. She said, it's even within families. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, my own family. And that's when she told me about her sister. And then her sister agreed to talk to me. And it just seems that it's completely intractable.
Now, did one of the sisters, there's two sisters here, Heidi and Ashley Lucas is their names. And as you indicated, one is in Missouri, who's involved in the union, the other. Now, does the other one have any union affiliation?
No, not the union. She's involved in the Nurses Association.
Oh, Nurses Association. Okay,
yeah, it's like the State Nurses Association.
I gotcha. Okay. Bottom line is one is pro-vaccine, the other is not. What kind of animosity is this creating? I guess let's start there.
Well, that's what I asked. And they said they love each other. They respect each other. But neither one of them is budging. The communication that we highlighted in our story about the two of them with Heidi trying to get Ashley to be vaccinated happened before a family visit, and the visit went ahead and went forward, but they still see each other, but they're not changing each other's mind.
Uh-huh.
So they're not mad at each other or exactly. They try to be understanding, but it's just an immovable object.
Okay. Why is the one sister so adamant against the vaccine? Because I've heard all kinds of stories. I'm sure you've been able to pull something out of
it. Mistake. I think it's a mistake to think that everyone, that it's one thing that is keeping people from being vaccinated. I think it is as individual as the people themselves. There are, of course, as you kind of alluded to, I mean, there's some theories out there that are pretty far-fetched, that it's the vaccine, you're going to get some microchip inserted in you, or that it's going to change your DNA or something like that.
Yeah.
I didn't talk to anybody like that of the people that I spoke with. The people that I talked to were much more of the opinion that they felt like there's been just a lot of shifting and evolving information about the virus. They felt like the vaccine was politicized, and it hadn't really been tested enough, or that it was rushed into people's arms. I think that's probably the primary thing that they feel like they're just mistrustful.
Mm-hmm.
And some people are also, they're mistrustful of, pretty much any authority figure telling them what to do. There's a lot of feeling of my body, I get to do what I want to with it. But of course, the problem becomes that it is your body. And, yes, you have a right, I suppose, to refuse the vaccine. But the fear is that this is a very vulnerable population in these long-term care facilities. And that if you are unknowingly bringing in the virus into your workplace, particularly the Delta variant, which is highly contagious, and even vaccinated people, if they have underlying health issues, like some of the elderly who would be in nursing homes, they're not necessarily 100% protected. So it's not just you.
Yeah. Well, you got to wonder about the families that would put their loved ones in a nursing home knowing that 40% of the staff is not vaccinated. I mean, that's a scary thought in itself. I want to ask you about the childhood vaccines for measles, mumps, rubella. Did she say anything about that? Because you know, typically you're vaccinated at birth.
She's not anti-vax, and I believe to tell you the truth, I can't remember whether she has children. And I think that she told me that her children are vaccinated. I do know she said she was not, quote, unquote, anti-vax, which would lead me to believe that she has fully vaccinated her children. I think it is this particular vaccine that has caused the consternation. But I also think that, to tell you the truth, I think it's a sign of the times. I think that when you would say to somebody who was in healthcare who has a science or a medical background, you'd say, but what about the science? But if you actually dig in and talk to these people and listen to them, they have their own science. There's a lot of websites out there that sound somewhat, somewhat plausible that have, quote unquote, proof that the vaccine is dangerous or that you don't need it. And so, you know, if you live in that bubble, then you feel vindicated for not and completely valid in your choice.
Well, just like if somebody tells you the election is rigged, you say that 1,000 times, people are going to believe it, right?
Well, I think, like I said, I think it's a sign of the times.
Good answer. Jenny, can you stay with us for another segment here on the show? Okay. Jenny Deem is her name, and she's out with a story on ProPublica with two other reporters about the pandemic of the unvaccinated, where more than 40% of the nation's nursing home and long-term health care workers have yet to get vaccinated. We'll continue the story right after this.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our Raising Wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Jenny Deem, reporter with ProPublica, which is a nonprofit newsroom. They do fantastic reporting, and the story is about the pandemic of the unvaccinated, and Jenny and a couple of her coworkers found out that more than 40%, so that's what, 2 out of 5 of the nation's nursing homes and long-term healthcare workers have yet to receive vaccinations. Now, Jenny, I was just reading recently about 50 major health care organizations all joined together urging health care and long-term care employers like nursing homes to require their employees to get vaccinated as the cases are rising, and we're seeing it. So I'm just wondering how this is going to fit in down the road here. I mean, this is obviously a growing trend because, first of all, we're dealing with this Delta variant, and I heard just the other day that this is like 1,200 times more contagious than the first virus, COVID-19. Now, that's scary. It's scary in itself. But I'm just wondering if we get this mandate, and if you could speak to that, if that's going to change things here. Because in some cases, I would imagine workers, if they don't get vaccinated, they'll get fired. What's your take on all of this?
Well, I think that's the direction things are going. I think that there is this sort of overall feeling that, you know, the carrot approach hasn't worked. It's time for the sticks, you know, and other countries have done it. And of course, there's been some outcry, but, you know, more and more just within the last 48 hours, more and more places are coming out and saying, we will mandate that you get vaccinated. And I am sure will create some pushback. You are correct about the, you know, get vaccinated or get fired. Probably the first big well-known case was in Houston at Houston Methodist, large hospital at the Texas Medical Center, which told employees that, I think it's 26,000 employees, every one of them had to be vaccinated by early June, or they would lose their jobs. And 117 employees sued and said, you can't do that. And a judge said, yes, you can, and threw the healthcare workers case out. Now it's being appealed. It's being watched. If I had to guess, I would say that as more and more mandates come into play, there may be more lawsuits about workers' rights and whether or not this is overreach. One of the issues in the mandates, there's really several, but one reason that there has been some reluctance for employers to, you know, take this hard line on it is because the three vaccines have emergency use authorization rather than full FDA approval. Now, supposedly that's coming, but you could argue that, and some have, well, I'm not going to take this vaccine because it's experimental. But I think the bigger issue really is that, especially in nursing homes, it is very hard to get workers. It's not very glamorous work. Aren't paid well. They don't get a lot of respect, so it's very difficult to keep these places fully staffed. And if you say, well, you're either going to get vaccinated or you're going to get fired, I think that there is concern in the industry that they will lose staff. Because a lot of these workers have said, I will quit rather than get vaccinated. So that sets up kind of a, it basically sets up the, I think, the battleground, or the battle lines, excuse me. But the EEOC has come out and said that employers are within their legal rights to mandate vaccines. They can do it.
Jenny, let me stop you there for a minute, because I've been noticing this trend in America, various states, mostly red states, where the legislatures are trying to pass laws, and I don't know if they've been successful in some, where they want to come down on the industry that tries to mandate workers getting the vaccine, saying, well, you can't do that, so we're going to pass a law. So I don't know how that's going to pan out in America. That's something that we have to watch here. And the funny part about it is conservatives usually let employers do what they want to do. It's part of deregulation. It's like taking all the rules off. But in this case, apparently they don't like the vaccine, so they want to have strings attached. So that's just something that's happening in America. But what do you see, the bigger picture here? What's your thoughts on how this is all going to pan out? Because it seems like a tug of war is going on right now.
Well, I think that we will see more mandates. I think that if you were talking about the politics, if you notice there are some governors who are starting to create wiggle room. They're saying, well, we think you should get a vaccine. We're for getting a vaccine. However, we're also for personal choice. So that gives you a little bit of wiggle room. I also think that part of one other thing that's happened is they will say, if you choose not to be vaccinated, you will have to be tested more often. You'll have to wear masks, so on and so forth. So I think that the way things are going is toward more and more mandates as the Delta variant takes hold. But I there's also this whole question of how do you save face?
Mm-hmm. Boy, I tell you, this is a heck of a story because, as you well know, there's like 10,000 people turning 65 every day, and we have an older population that's growing by leaps and bounds, and many of them are going to end up in nursing homes, let's be honest here. And you got to wonder, especially with families putting their loved ones in nursing homes, when they see the figures that 40% of the staff is not vaccinated, they're going to scratch their head and wonder, I don't know, what's the alternative here? So it's uncharted waters right now. So I don't know where this thing is going to end. And I'm just wondering, since your story posted, Jenny, has there been any comments from the parties involved here? What's the latest on that?
We've definitely received a lot of people thanking us for what we, for bringing this subject to light. I would say the overwhelming response, if on social media anyway, is people are just outraged. They're sort of like I don't understand how can you. They don't understand the disconnect between being a healthcare worker and potentially putting the person that you're serving at risk. But again, the people that are that are unvaccinated, they don't see it that way.
No.
They just don't.
No.
They say they love their patients. They're going to take all of the necessary precautions, such as masks and testing and gloves, and they just don't think the vaccine is necessary or it's too untested. They don't know there's a lot of concern about that. Nobody really knows the long-term effects of either vaccines or COVID. I mean, when you said uncharted waters, that was absolutely the truth. There is nothing about the pandemic that is predictable. So this is just one more thing.
Well, there's a lot of people that just don't trust the government. And when the government says do this, they just do the opposite. So this, again, is one to watch. And Ashley Lucas, now, are you going to keep in touch with these two sisters here to see if Ashley finally gives in, especially when they give FDA approval? Do you think she might go for it?
That's a great idea. I actually hadn't thought about that, but I probably will. I'll give it a week or so and reach out to her, and to both of the two women, and see if anything's changed.
There you go. Great story. Jenny, once again, thank you. I love what you're doing. I love what ProPublica is all about, nonprofit newsroom. And you see a lot of newsrooms going in that direction today. So keep up the great work, and please keep in touch with us, okay?
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Fascinating story. The pandemic of the unvaccinated. More than 40%, 2 out of 5 of the nation's nursing home and long-term healthcare workers have yet to receive vaccinations. All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the latest from Humana, the healthcare group, and the United Labor Agency. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.